KALW.
We declared a public state of emergency here in San Francisco so that we can further prepare for the possible arrival of the coronavirus.
Well, now it's here, and Mayor London Breed and her Department of Public Health have taken aggressive measures to keep it from spreading.
It's important that everything that we know is communicated directly to the public so that we have accurate information.
We'll share the latest updates on COVID-19 and how it's impacting the Bay Area. Then, what does it take to run a trans-inclusive business in Oakland?
There's not that many people like me, and so it's nice to be together, at least in a workplace, and just understand each other.
And the latest episode in our podcast, TBH, this one's about perception and Treasure Island. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Today, we're starting with, of course, coronavirus. And I'm joined by KALW News Director Ben Trefney. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Hannah.
So what we know today, there's a new fatality in Santa Clara County. It's the county's first death. A woman in her 60s. She was diagnosed back on February 28th. She was one of three people diagnosed.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty quick.
Right. And so what else is going on?
Well, the item that's getting the most attention around the country, Hannah, is the Grand Princess cruise ship, which docked in the port of Oakland around noon today. The ship has more than 3,500 people aboard. About 2,400 of them are passengers, and it's got over 1,000 crew members. Mm. So 21 of the people on the ship are confirmed to have the novel coronavirus or COVID-19. 19 of those people who are ill are, in fact, crew members.
Right.
So it's going to take a couple of days to disembark the passengers, and they're being whisked away to various places for quarantine, including Travis Air Force Base in Fairfield near here and Miramar Naval Air Station in San Diego. And by the way, Hannah, USA Today is reporting that all the guests are having their cruise fees refunded, along with airfare and other incidentals.
Okay, so a lot of people are asking the question, how are they going to be kept away from the general public?
Well, Governor Newsom gave a news conference in Oakland yesterday with Mayor Libby Schaaf and made several assurances that they would be held and treated at a safe distance. So I've been wondering that same thing as far as the chauffeurs and, of course, the doctors. I have friends who are doctors who have been thinking a lot at their hospitals about
right.
how are they going to make sure that they keep from getting the virus as well. But I think that they will do the same kind of practices that we're being expected to do here, such as wash our hands and
right.
make sure to keep as safe as we can.
Mm-hmm.
Public officials generally have been scrambling to share information and make sure that people know what's going on without panicking or overreacting. Here's a clip of San Francisco Mayor London Breed, who's been one of the earliest to take direct action.
A lot of information gets out there. It's not entirely true, but it's important that everything that we know is communicated directly to the public so that we have accurate information every step of the way.
So San Francisco's Department of Public Health on Friday sent out numerous text advisories saying they recommend canceling non-essential large community events for the next 2 weeks. Seems like a policy of better safe than sorry.
So your festivals, your large gatherings.
Yeah, the things that would otherwise
parades,
have been scheduled. It could be.
The St. Patrick's Day parade was canceled.
That's exactly. And this is going to be included within the run-up to March 19th, which would be 2 weeks from that declaration. And of course, that's at the very least. It could go beyond that.
Right. And school closures is another big thing people are thinking about. I'm a parent. You're a parent.
Mm-hmm.
My kids' schools are taking extra precautions, like you mentioned. You know, the assemblies are canceled. The big games are canceled.
Mm-hmm.
So far in the Bay Area, no whole districts have shut down.
Though the Elk Grove School District near Sacramento, that did shut down for this week right here.
That's right. But here in the Bay Area, it's been individual schools. We're part of San Francisco Unified School District. What can you tell us about the plans here?
Right. Well, as you said, I'm a father and I have twins who are at San Francisco Unified High Schools. My daughter goes to Lowell High School, and on Thursday, she was sent home midday because a family member of another student was diagnosed with the virus.
Mm-hmm.
That student, actually all the kids, have been out of school since then, but it's day to day. My son is at Ruth Asawa School of the Arts, and they and other schools and districts are canceling events, theater performances and the like. And over the weekend, as you mentioned, big games. Several sports teams throughout the state had to forfeit games if their schools were shut down, and this is playoff season.
Right.
So I can tell you that my kids are getting worried about losing their senior prom, though I will add they understand considering the public health risk.
Right. I also went to the mall over the weekend. It was pretty empty. What kind of effect will this have on the local economy and shopping?
Sure. Well, one of the things that we know is that grocery stores are finding it hard to keep food and other supplies on their shelves. For instance, sales at Costco are up over 12% in February compared with a year ago. And I'll note, the company attributes only about 3% of that growth to coronavirus, but it's happening. Mm-hmm. We sent KLW's Christopher Agusa to downtown Oakland to see how people are feeling about all this. He spoke with, first, Morgan Reich.
I feel a little more cautious about what doorknobs I touch, whose hands I shake. Definitely if you hear someone coughing on BART, you're like, oh, do they have the virus? So I do think it's put more of a barrier, I think, between me and other people, which is weird, but I go from like being worried to like, oh, maybe it's okay, to, oh, maybe I should worry about it.
I'm DeAndre Millett. Me personally, I'm really not afraid of it because I really don't get sick like that. For some reason, I got a real high immune system. A lot of the times, I will wear the face mask at work. It's just not today because they ran out. There's no use in even trying to fight it. Just do the best we can as far as staying sanitized and things like that.
My name is Lulu Safi. I'm 26 years old, and I'm the owner of Maya Halal Taqueria. As a restaurant owner, you know, it's tough because a lot of people aren't coming into the restaurants. They want to use the delivery services like DoorDash, Uber Eats, and things like that. So I do plan on signing up with them, you know, just to make sure that I can keep my doors open and business is still running.
My name is Tanya Owens. I'm 48 years old. I sell hair extensions. My business is hair candy. China is like my only source of income, kind of, because I get everything from China. So when they shut down, it was slowing me down. They were shut down for like 3 weeks and a half. I don't know what can happen. This just taught me a lesson, like you gotta have a plan B.
Thanks to KALW's Chris Agusa for bringing us those voices from downtown Oakland. And Ben, you know, Silicon Valley is reacting in a big way, too. My commute this morning over the San Mateo Bridge, over 101, was so light. The lightest, I'd say, in years.
A blessing because, in disguise.
Right, yeah. I mean, because some big tech companies like Apple, Google, Facebook, they've told their employees to work from home.
Yeah, I mean, it could be the case for a lot of businesses. It might be around the corner for us at KALW here as well, Hannah. Mm. Though we did talk about it at a management meeting this morning, and whether or not our offices are shut down, we plan on continuing to report every day on what's happening as this story evolves.
Yes, we do. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you.
Ben Trefney's KALW's news director, and KALW will continue bringing you local and regional updates during Cross Currents and also during our newscasts during Morning Edition and All Things Considered, and we'll bring you these reports as frequently as warranted. So stay tuned. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Businesses around the Bay Area are starting to feel the impact of the fears around coronavirus. Whether it's companies asking their workers to stay home or lower numbers of customers at the malls or even restaurants. And even in times when there's no health epidemic frenzy, it's hard to run a successful restaurant in the Bay Area. This year, we've already seen the closing of local staples like Savor Open Kitchen in Noe Valley and Frangal in Mission Bay. And there are additional challenges that come with being a trans chef. KALW's Julia Linus Goodman brings us the story of how one Oakland restaurant owner is making it work.
On a typical weekend day, Sophia Spice is up early to get ready for work. They might go to the market to buy ingredients, swing by their satellite kitchen to pick up some equipment, and their car broke down a while back. So they'll be carrying all of that on their bike, or
I'm just on my skateboard, like going slowly, just with whatever step I have.
They get to their restaurant in time to get ready for brunch, which starts at 11 a.m. Some days they won't get out of here until 11 p.m.
Hello, this is Gay for You. This is Sophie speaking. How can I help you?
You might be able to tell from the name, but Gay for You isn't the most traditional restaurant. For one thing, the dishes have names like the New Magic Breakfast Burrito and the Gay for Parfait.
It's all vegan. And it's gay.
Yay!
But there's another unusual thing about this place.
Yeah. Do you guys want some brownies on me?
They give away a lot of free food. Gay For You is on a busy corner in downtown Oakland, just a couple of blocks from City Hall. It's in a small, narrow space with a kitchen in the middle and a seating area with a few tables on either side. On one of the days I visit, a Spice is both cooking and running the register. Every time someone comes in, they have to finish what they're working on in the kitchen.
Hey, Daisy, how are you? I'm just going to start some things. I'll be right up there.
Go up to the register and take an order.
And then do you want fries or salad with the chicken?
Then wash their hands again and jump back into cooking. It's a repeating pattern. A new customer comes in.
Hey, y'all.
A Spice chats with them and takes their order.
I like y'all's outfit. Is that for here?
Wash their hands. Cook. Customer.
Do you want to add fried chicken to that?
Wash hands. Cook. A Spice has been working in the food industry for almost 20 years. But they've been feeding people for even longer than that. Their parents didn't make many meals for the family, so A Spice learned to feed themselves and other people early.
I've been cooking since I was a baby for like my older brother and I. Cooking was like a way I showed love at an early age.
About a decade ago, A Spice started running their own pop-ups and a food truck called Hella Vegan Eats. Then they rented space from a bar, and Hella Vegan Eats became a more permanent restaurant. But A Spice and the bar's landlord didn't get along and couldn't agree on how to run the space. Last year, the landlord asked them to leave.
It was just a difficult transaction, like being under someone else's roof. When we finally got like the boot, it was just a difficult end of the road.
Finding space isn't the only thing that's been hard about working in the restaurant industry, especially since A Spice came out as trans a decade ago.
I worked at places where like they were not nice to me for being trans and just like would ask me like really inappropriate things and talk to me in inappropriate ways. And then I just like had to work with those people.
A Spice isn't alone in these experiences. According to industry research, more than half of trans people working in restaurants have been sexually harassed. So A Spice has worked really hard to make sure their restaurant isn't like that. That it's a nurturing workplace for their largely queer staff.
I find that a lot of the times I'm experiencing the world and I'm like, there's not that many people like me. And so it's nice to be together at least in a workplace and just understand each other.
They also want it to be a supportive space for Oakland's LGBTQ community, and specifically trans people of color. One way they're doing that is by advertising free food for them.
Most trans folk of color don't come from the best supported places, and it's really important for me to show up for them and to not only provide them with a space, but also be like, please come and eat here.
A Spice actually gives away a lot of free food, not just to trans people of color. They bring leftovers to homeless encampments, and if someone comes into Gay For You and says they can't afford to pay for a meal, A Spice doesn't turn them away.
Whoever wants to come in, like, I strongly suggest it. If they don't have the means, like, that's literally, that's how we can best survive, is helping each other.
Still, it's important to A Spice to be clear that trans and queer people specifically are welcome at Gay For You. That idea also shows up in the restaurant's name. It's kind of a secret code, a signal that speaks directly to anyone who feels the name might apply to them.
The whole goal of Gay For You is to be there for the community. It's literally, like, for you.
And in order to be there, A Spice needs to keep Gay For You open. So it might seem counterintuitive to give food away for free, but they don't see it that way.
I feel like if I'm going to survive as a business, then I have to still be me, and who I am is like still gonna be providing for people as much as I can.
Okay, but don't businesses have to make money? Well, it's not just A Spice taking care of others. Their community has taken care of them too. After Hella Vegan Eats closed, supporters raised over $15,000 online to help A Spice secure space for Gay For You. Then, in December, they hosted a fundraiser in the new space. I got to meet some of Gay for You's supporters and find out what brings them here.
I really like its mission and what it's trying to do for trans POC people in Oakland.
It's like a hot gay cafeteria.
I just wanted to support something like this because I feel like inclusive spaces like this are very important to the community.
People mention this feeling that there aren't a lot of other places like Gay for You. Spaces for queer and trans people to just hang out, that aren't focused on accessing services, but that also aren't centered around alcohol or partying. And all of this support has allowed a Spice to keep giving to others in a positive feedback loop.
Take their like $13 for chicken and waffles and then put like three of those dollars into like providing free food, then that's how I should do it.
There are a lot of variables, and a Spice knows that this may not be permanent. Rent could go up, their lease could not get renewed, or not enough customers show up. But their plan is to keep going, no matter what.
I mean, I think I'll always cook as long as I have, like, the, you know, limbs and stuff and a head. I think that I'll always be making food for people.
In downtown Oakland, I'm Julia Linus Goodman for Cross Currents.
Julia is a fellow in the KALW Audio Academy. You can find more stories from this year's Audio Academy at kalw.org. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Next up, it's TBH, our new series produced by high schoolers. I'll hand it over to the host, Oakland's Youth Poet Laureate Samuel Gattacho. He's going to take us to a special place in the Bay.
This podcast is made by, about, and for teenagers, and for anybody else who wants to hear what's on our minds. Treasure Island. Sounds romantic, right? Well, it's actually an artificial island built on a natural reef between Oakland and San Francisco. Only a few thousand people live there now. But San Francisco officials have big plans to turn the island into a high-density eco-city. Landon Neal didn't know about any of this when he moved there a few years ago in middle school. He just knew that he hated living somewhere that felt so isolated, empty, and abandoned. But then, he discovered old film footage that sent him on a mission to understand the forces that shaped the island's history, to understand it beyond the single representation he saw every day.
In 2015, my dad and I moved out to the island. We moved from Los Angeles when he got a job working on a major transit center. Treasure Island was one of the few affordable places left in San Francisco. So all of a sudden, I found myself living on an island I knew nothing about. It reminded me of a deserted theme park, only without the charm. The fog covered everything up. I remember a lot of abandoned houses and a huge pile of dirt and a baseball field in the middle of the island. My dad told me this place was sinking into the bay, and he warned me about not planting any food on the soil because he said it was radioactive. But then in high school, my perception of Treasure Island changed forever. I had just joined a film club and was learning all about digital media. I stumbled on archival footage that showed Treasure Island in 1940.
Gone the brilliant spectacle of 5 million California flowers woven into a fabric of wondrous exhibits and spectacular shows.
The footage was shot towards the end of the Golden Gate International Exposition, the Great World's Fair of the West. The video shows striking artwork and buildings, like the elephant towers, where abstract Burmese elephants rest on Mayan pyramids.
Creating an atmosphere of the peace and industrial security that belongs to us, the people of the Western Hemisphere.
For the longest time, I didn't believe this video was real. After seeing the footage, I knew I wanted to learn more about the history and why it was once called the Magic City. But the history of Treasure Island doesn't begin at the World's Fair.
I think when it was built, it was probably one of the largest man-made islands in the world.
Tanu Sankalia is an art and architecture professor at the University of San Francisco. He's also the co-editor of Urban Reinventions, San Francisco's Treasure Island. In the 1930s, San Francisco wanted to build an airport to assert West Coast dominance of commerce in the Pacific. But there wasn't a whole lot of room in the city for an airport. So, San Francisco decided to build an island from scratch, out of mud dredged from the bay.
They created a seawall out of huge, gigantic boulders. And because it was flat and man-made, there was nothing on it. So everything was sort of brought in right from, you know, buildings were built on it, roads were constructed, plots were created. They brought in different plants from all over and trees, huge trees, which they put in there.
By 1937, the Golden Gate Bridge and the Bay Bridge were both finished. And San Francisco's elite wanted to show off and celebrate. So, 2 years later, San Francisco hosted the Golden Gate International Exposition on Treasure Island. The fair was meant to showcase peace and harmony and artwork from cultures around the Pacific Rim. But what I didn't realize was that this celebration was happening the same time as World War II was beginning in Europe.
On a global level, I mean, of course, it was the United States projecting its power in the Pacific Rim. There was no doubt about that. But of course, then couching it, you know, in this idea of peace and harmony.
That image couldn't last. By 1940, the fair was over. Sankalia says the Navy soon transformed the Magic City into a military space to serve the war effort. The Navy wiped out most of the buildings almost immediately. The famous Japanese pavilion was even torched. The footage I had found in my high school film club shows Treasure Island just before all of this happened. So the film that made me want to learn more about Treasure Island is actually really sad. And soon after I found that tape, I found this one from 1940.
There's nobody on Treasure Island today but the seagulls. The gateway is there, but not in the way it used to be. The barkers are gone, the girls are gone, the giant crane and the octopus and the roller coaster are still. Will they move once more? Will the World's Fair of the West ever be seen again in all its brilliant color, with its crowds and its music? Or will it always be barren like this? We don't know. That's up to the bankers and the creditors. But the giant cash register, which used to turn up the big attendance figures, is all closed out.
The rest of Treasure Island's history is really bleak. The Navy operated a radiological training school on the island beginning in the 1950s. The military cleaned contaminated substances off of ships like the USS Pandemonium to practice for potential nuclear warfare.
So this really became the source of all the contamination that we see, you know, over a period of over 50 years.
The naval station closed down in the late 90s. San Francisco bought the island back and began plans for a massive development project. San Francisco plans to turn the island into Magic City 2.0. Only instead of showing off culture like in the World's Fair, this project is meant to show off environment sustainability. The grand vision is to transform Treasure Island into an ecotopia, or a super green city of the future.
You say, wow, look, there's 100 acres of built and 300 acres that's open. And out of the open space, the plan is to have wetlands and bike paths and all these very sustainable and eco-friendly aspects.
Sankalia says Treasure Island has always been a site of contradictions. The World's Fair, for example, advertised peace during war. And now, city leaders hope to somehow turn this island, which has had a history of radiation and contamination, into a post-carbon ecotopia.
Now, the question that everybody asks is that how is this actually going to be sustainable?
Because Treasure Island is made of mud, there are also questions about how it would grapple with an earthquake or the effects of climate change.
The projections are very, very different. But one thing we know is that given the rate of change that we're seeing globally in terms of sea level rise and the melting of the ice caps and so on, and that a large part of the island could potentially be underwater by 2050.
Sankalia says Treasure Island is a perfect example of what he calls urban reinvention. That's where officials take a space that already exists, try to start over and build. But he says you can't erase the past or present. Thousands of people already live there.
One of the things that we say is that there's a sort of a paradox within urban reinvention, within this whole notion of erasure, because you really cannot wipe everything out. Because contamination, for example, still creeps through.
Still, officials are plowing ahead. 2 years ago, the city broke ground on a huge real estate project to fill the land with about 20,000 residents by 2035. When I look around the island now, all I see are gated off areas and construction. My local church was forced to move off the island. The chicken and waffle shop I really wanted to try closed down. If this development project does finish up on time, I'll be 33 years old by then. I don't have high hopes. Treasure Island was a major tourist attraction during the World's Fair. The artwork and architecture brought people together. I love that stuff, and I love watching the old footage, but it was temporary. What I'd really like to see in the city is a community that lasts.
That's Landon Neal reporting for KALW's newest podcast, TBH. It's by, about, and for teenagers and anyone else who wants to hear what's on their minds. That's just part one of the latest episode. Subscribe on your favorite podcast player to hear the rest. TBH reporters were trained and edited by Holly J. McDeed and Kristen McCandless. Support for TBH comes from the California Arts Council, Cal Humanities, and the Association for Continuing Education. TBH episodes drop every Monday. Today's Cross Currents team includes Sona Avakian, Janae Darden, Christopher Igusa, True Gwynn, and Marissa Ortega Welch. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Dawood Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.